WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? It is Tuesday, July 28th, 2015, and you are tuned into Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We've got a fantastic show in store for you all. Later on in the show, we'll be inviting Cam Holding, who is the new head coach of the Michigan State men's lacrosse team. That should be an interesting interview. We'll also discuss a certain individual, a certain player for the Michigan State football team who was actually suspended not too long ago for an incident away from the football field, but who has been reinstated with the program and will be a part of the team as upcoming practices now loom and college football season is right around the corner. We'll discuss that, and you'll find out who that player is in just a second. Also, in the NFL, they have now hired, a certain NFL team has now hired the very first female coach. How about that? We'll discuss and debate that. And also, should Alex Rodriguez be considered for the Comeback Player Award in the Major League Baseball League? It should be an interesting debate there because he has been tearing it up. And many people think that maybe A-Rod should be considered for this award, even though the reason why he is coming back is because of his quarrels away from the baseball field due to performance-enhancing drugs. So we'll discuss and debate about that, as well as take your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. Call 517-355-9527. Without further ado, here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this July 28th. Start with news in the recruiting wheelhouse of the Michigan State football team. A.J. Arcuri, a 6'6", 250-pound lineman from Olentangy Liberty High, announced his commitment to Michigan State yesterday on Twitter after receiving an offer from Mark D'Antonio on Friday night. He is the third offensive lineman in the class and the 20th member, including kicker Matt Coughlin, who will gray shirt and start on scholarship in January of 2017. Arcuri, a three-star prospect according to Rivals.com, also had offers from Pittsburgh, Illinois, and Indiana. He is ranked the number 70 offensive tackle in the country in the 247sports.com composite of the rankings of various recruiting services. Delvin Williams, a junior running back from Erie, Pennsylvania, will return to the Spartans on August 14th as a non-scholarship player in the fall, per a news release issued Monday evening by Michigan State, including a suspension that started on March 16th after he was arrested for allegedly brandishing a registered firearm on campus in a road rage incident. He pleaded guilty to a reduced weapons charge on April 29th in East Lansing's 54B District Court and could be subject to fines and costs at a December 18th sentencing. Now, Williams could potentially become a serious player in the Michigan State running back competition, which includes returnees Gerald Holmes and Madre London and incoming freshman L.J. Scott. The University of Michigan football team has fewer than 4,000 seats total remaining for its seven-game home college football schedule. Now, most of those are for UNLV and BYU non-conference games. Those two are the only games with group seating, which means more than a single ticket is available. And U of M Associate Athletic Director Kurt Swuba announced all of that yesterday. Kurt Casale powered the Tampa Bay Rays with two home runs to lead a 5-2 win over the Detroit Tigers on Monday night at Tropicana Field. 1 year after being traded from Tampa Bay at the July 31st 9-waiver trade deadline, David Price makes his final start before this year's deadline back at Tropicana Field, with trade rumors surrounding him yet again. First pitch is scheduled for 7:10 p.m. Eastern Time. The Detroit Tigers are now 4.5 games in back of claiming a wild card spot in the American League. Alex Rodriguez turned 40 on Monday, and he homered in the sixth inning of the New York Yankees 6-2 win over the Texas Rangers. With that, he became just the fourth player in the long history of Major League Baseball to homer before he was 20 and after he turned 40. Now, over the fence birthday present to himself was A-Rod's 24th homer of the year. Only eight players in Major League Baseball have more this season, and they are a lot younger than 40 years old. All right, Mike Kostyuk, the oldest living Detroit Lion and one of the NFL's oldest living players, died Sunday of heart failure at his home in Sterling Heights. He was 95 years old. Kostyuk played six games as a tackle for the Detroit Lions in 1945. He also played one game for the Cleveland Rams in 1941. According to oldestlivingfootball.com, former end and tackle Cecil Souders, who is 94, he is now the oldest living Detroit Lion. He also was the third oldest living NFL player behind Jack Bullis Smith, who is 97, Fred Glowden, who was 96, both of the Philadelphia Eagles, according to the website. The Cardinals, Arizona Cardinals, have hired Jen Welter as an assistant coaching intern for training camp and the preseason to work with inside linebackers. She is believed to be the first female coach of any kind in the NFL. Welter, who is 37 years old, has been making history throughout her career. In February, she actually became the first female coach in a men's professional football league when she was hired by the Texas Revolution for the indoor football league to coach the linebackers and special teams. And last but not least, the Pro Football Hall of Fame is not allowing the family of deceased linebacker Junior Seau to speak on his behalf at the induction ceremony on August 8th in Canton, Ohio. And despite an early report to the contrary, the family is not happy about it. Seau's wish was that his daughter, Sydney, would speak for him upon his induction, but the hall is falling back on a process they instituted in 2010, shortening the ceremony by not allowing a formal speaker for deceased inductees. Call in right now, 517-355-9527. Those are your current sports quick hit headliners.
Hit the air to right field. Two going back near the wall. And this one is gone. A home run for Alex Rodriguez on a 3-1 pitch. And the Yankees now lead 4-2. That one just got over the wall. His 24th home run of the year. And the sixth time he has hit a home run on his birthday. How about that?
Have you started to lose your love for me? And if so, will you still continue to be on my side?
Welcome to Current Sports, the only place where you can hear a montage of Alex Rodriguez hitting a home run underneath the soft, subtle tune of SOS Band's Tell Me If You Still Care. Welcome to the show, folks. And do you guys still care about Alex Rodriguez? If you don't, he is making many folks talk about him. I will say that. Unbelievable. I mean, 40 years old, what a birthday present to go up and smack a home run. That's unbelievable stuff. Unbelievable stuff, folks. And he is playing so good this year. I mean, his numbers are off the charts. As I stated, in our quick hit headliners, again, he turned 40 on Monday. He homered in the sixth inning of the New York Yankees 6-2 win over the Texas Rangers. And the over-the-fence B-Day present to himself was A-Rod's 24th homer of the year. Only eight players in Major League Baseball history, Major League Baseball this year, have more than that number this year. And they, all of them, aren't near 40 years old. I will say that. Unbelievable stuff. So, you know, the question on today's show that we want to pose to you all out there, when looking at what Alex Rodriguez has done so far this season, do you think that we should all care about A-Rod? Should he be considered for the Major League Baseball's Comeback Player of the Year award. What do you think? What do you think? There are many out there that feel as though, you know, that A-Rod being away from the game of baseball due to his, you know, muddy situation, being caught using performance-enhancing drugs, with that whole thing going on, it's not fair to consider Alex Rodriguez for Major League Baseball's Comeback Player of the Year award because he was involved in a sicky situation away from the game. When other players who legitimately were out due to other areas, like injuries, who have come back and are having solid years, you know, it's not fair to them if A-Rod is considered because, you know, hey, he was away from the game for the wrong reason. Injuries, you can't help that. Using performance-enhancing drugs, that is entirely, you know, hey, that's your personal decision. So what do you think? Should Alex Rodriguez be considered for the Comeback Player of the Year award? That is our question of the day here on WKAR's Current Sports. We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. And actually, you'll get to hear my thoughts along with Isaac, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. You get to hear his thoughts on the back end of the show. But we want to know what you think. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Without further ado, how about we welcome Isaac to the show? Isaac, how you doing, my man?
Doing well, Al. I am, man, you'd think it's Barbershop Wednesday with this topic, huh?
I know, right? Hot topic, right?
It's great, though. I'm excited to talk about this. Did my research. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say about it, too, because it is this issue that really divides people. So I'm excited to see what our listeners think as well if they give us a call in, because I personally, well, I'm not going to give anything away. But
yeah, well, we'll table it right now. We'll table it.
Exactly.
I don't know what you want to know, what your opinion is on it right now. But again, on the back end of the show, we will discuss that because it is a legit argument here. Because, you know, everywhere you look, I mean, Alex Rodriguez's name, many people feel as though it has to be in the conversation because he has been away from the game and has now come back and is having a stellar year. But at the same time, there are other players out there who, again, you know, we're not, you know, a part of the game, you know, last year due to injuries. And, you know, they believe that those individuals should have the upper hand in that discussion for that award. So, again, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll also be opening up our social media forum like we always do as well. Go to facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there, and I will read your comments live here on the air. You can also even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Well, Isaac, we have a few things to take care of before we get to that discussion later on. Again, I want you guys to stick around because we will be also talking with Cam Holding, who is the new head coach of the Michigan State men's lacrosse team. Cam has an interesting story as to how that hire came about and how the program made its way to Michigan State. And he's had quite the journey. He's actually born and raised in Whitby, Ontario, Canada, which is not too far from Toronto, Canada. And it's been an interesting journey for him to now find himself here in the good old U.S. of A., now coaching lacrosse and also even a member of Major League Lacrosse and the National Lacrosse League. So that should be an interesting chat. I got to remind you all that, hey, Current Sports TV also tapes tomorrow at 3 p.m. Tomorrow I'll be chatting with Darius Ward, who is the new head coach of the Okemos girls varsity high school soccer team. So you don't want to miss that. Darius, you talk about a story. He also has an interesting story about how he ended up right here in the United States of America. He's actually from Liberia. How about that? All the way from Liberia. And I actually met Darius. His interesting story with that one as well, because I met Darius. I went to school with him at Michigan State, and he's an unbelievable soccer player. Has been for quite a while, and so much so that, you know, he started, you know, as an assistant coach for a few programs here in the area for a few years, actually even working under Nick Archer at East Lansing High School. Nick Archer is a household name when it comes to soccer and coaching. And Darius has worked his way up, and so much so that Ira Childress, who's the athletic director at Okemos High School Athletics, he decided to hire Darius. And he's, you know, he's 24 years old, young kid, man, who looks to do some great things as the head coach of the Chiefs. So you don't want to miss that. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience tomorrow at 3 o'clock, all you got to do is simply go to WKAR.com. Sports.org. So a lot happening this week, Isaac, on Current Sports. Before we say bye-bye for a week of vacation, and then we will be back after next week. But we got a lot to get to before then. First topic of discussion here, Isaac, I want to bring up, of course, new commit for the Michigan State football team. A.J. Arcuri, 6'6", 250-pound lineman from Olentangy, Liberty High. He announced his commitment to Michigan State yesterday on Twitter after receiving an offer from Coach D on Friday night, last week Friday. And he is now the third offensive lineman in the class and 20th member, including kicker Matt Coughlin, who, again, will gray shirt and start on scholarship in January of 2015. And, you know, we sort of debated yesterday, Isaac, on, of course, the situation with, his name is eluding right now.
Gavin Cup.
Yeah, Cup, exactly. And you know, looking at Cup's situation, because actually Coach Mark D'Antonio decided to pull the offer of Gavin Cup to come to Michigan State because Gavin Cup was actually attending Ohio State recruiting events, you know, working out with OSU coaches, going to different, you know, camps out in Columbus. And Coach D saw that and his coaching staff saw that, and they decided that, okay, we're going to pull his scholarship because, even though he said he's committed to Michigan State, who knows what might happen, seeing as though he's been spending a lot of time with Ohio State. So, you know, and we both agreed yesterday that Coach D pulling that scholarship from Cup and offering it to A.J. Arcuri is basically saying, hey, we're moving on. You know, they're not crying over spilt milk here. I mean, yeah. Could Gavin Cup have been a great player if he would have donned the green and white jersey and came to this program? Of course, certainly. But at the same time, if they feel on the fence about a recruit and they feel as though at the end of the day that recruit is not all in being a part of this program, hey, we'll take our scholarship elsewhere and offer it to someone else. That's the mindset of Coach D here. And I think he gets a great prospect in A.J. Arcuri. I mean, again, he's 6'6", 250 pounds. He's listed as a three-star recruit when you average, the analysis of various recruiting services out there. So he looks to be a solid player. Again, you know, this is still a kid in high school that has yet to, practice in a Michigan State uniform for the program yet. So we don't really know how good these kids are at the end of the day. But at the same time, offering the scholarship to AJ was a sign that, hey, and it lets everyone know out there that, hey, you know, hey, if you don't want to be a part of this program, hey, we're not going to, going to cry over it. We're going to move on and offer it to someone else. And I think this may be a good addition for the program.
Oh, I think it will be. And especially when you look at the Spartans, eventually with Messiah DeWeaver, they're going to have more of a scrambling QB than they do in Connor Cook currently. Messiah DeWeaver's just a little bit faster, and he's a pocket passer, but he does have that speed. So, Arcuri, from what I've seen, and if you remember, I name-dropped him yesterday, just touting him as a possible replacement for the Spartans. I must have had my crystal ball out because next day, man, I was spot on. But anyway, Arcuri's a little bit faster than Cup was. So, 255 pounds instead of 270. Looks to be a good run blocker. So I'm excited to see what he brings to this team. I think he'll eventually be a starter down the road. Still a very good player. But he is also lower in the rankings than Cup. So, you know, it's a toss-up. But I think with linemen, you can go a lot of different ways. There's a lot of different skill sets, and I don't think either is wrong for this Barnes.
Yeah, and again, if you look at it right now, Arcuri, he's actually ranked as the number 70 offensive tackle in the country. So, and again, if you look at his profile on, I'm looking here actually at 247sports.com, he's a three-star when you average, when you take the average of the various recruiting services who have looked at A.J. Arcuri and made an analysis on him. So, hey, they're moving on. He was recruited by Mark Staten and Jim Bowman, and I think he's going to be he could be a great addition to this program. But, again, it's the notion's out there that, hey, we're going to move on. We're going to offer this to someone else who wants to be here. And, it seems as though A.J. Arcuri is going to be 100% committed to the program. Now, I want to talk about another player who we actually debated about and, when this incident actually occurred, and that's Delton Williams, Michigan State running back, junior running back now for the Spartans, who will rejoin the team on August 14th as a non-scholarship player in the fall. Again, this occurred through a news release. This news was found out through a news release on Monday evening by Michigan State University, concluding a suspension that actually started March 16th after Williams was arrested for allegedly brandishing a registered firearm on campus in a road rage incident. He pled guilty to a reduced weapons charge on April 29th in East Lansing 54B District Court and could be subject to fines and cost at a December 18th sentencing. And, you know, this is an interesting story because, you know, Isaac, Delton Williams is a player who is going to be right in the thick of things. First, when looking at the X's and O's of this whole thing, the competition for that running back slot on this team is going to be a battle because you talk about returnees Gerald Holmes, Madre London, incoming freshman L.J. Scott. We saw Delton Williams a lot last year. He's a power back. He's a pretty elusive guy. You know, he's got to work on his speed here and there, but he's not that type of back at the end of the day. But he is a back who could legitimately compete, can compete for that starting position among, you know, the names of Holmes, London, and Scott. And, you know, when I first heard this story, first off, it was a bit unsettling because anytime you are discussing, you know, anyone for that matter, not even just an athlete here, anyone, you know, flashing a gun during a road rage incident or any incident for that matter, I mean, that's scary stuff. So when I first heard of it, you know, the immediate thought that crossed my mind is, okay, here we go with another incident of an athlete, you know, just doing something that was just, at the end of the day, idiotic, you know, stupid. And, you know, as that story went on, I want to mention this because I think that this also needs to be said and is a key part to this story because when you look at that, you know, police report on the March 16th incident, first off, Williams had turned left in front of the alleged victim's car at a spotlight, and then he was honked at. And, you know, then after that took place, Williams yelled out of his window and at the alleged victim and waved his gun around the inside of his car. Scary stuff. You know, you never, and even though he did have a permit, he did have a permit to carry the firearm. Anytime you're using it that in that matter, that's against the law. You can't do that. And, you know, the alleged victim came out, if you remember, a day or two afterwards. And he said that, you know, after he had learned that Delton Williams had experienced tragedy within his family, as Williams had recently lost his brother and a friend to unsolved murders in his hometown of Erie, Pennsylvania, the alleged victim, he really became sympathetic after learning that part of the story. And he realized why Delton Williams might have been on edge and why he carries a firearm at the end of the day. So for me, there is a part of me that sympathizes with the notion of Delton Williams carrying a firearm because, hey, I've never been through anything like that where I've lost a brother or a dear friend of mine to a murder. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that could easily put somebody on the edge, and that could easily lead someone to say, okay, if that has happened to members that are close to me, members, you know, who are friends of mine, family members of mine, I'm going to make sure I'm strapped so that it doesn't happen to me. I get that. And again, he possessed the firearm legally. He had a permit to carry the firearm. That's the report is, what the report is saying. But you have to be careful with how you use it. So there is a part of me, and again, I actually, I actually just moved into a new apartment here in the area. And it's interesting because, you know, this has happened to be like a few months ago. I'm going into the Quality Dairy corner store just to do a few, some shopping. I had to go grab a few items from there. And, you know, I grab my items and I go to the front, you know, the front desk. And guess who's checking me out? Delton Williams. And I'm telling you, man, he had like five customers, you know, there were like five customers in front of me. And he was running back and forth and working. And I recognize his face because, of course, I've covered him, you know, while he's been a player here at Michigan State. I don't think he recognized my face because, you know, he checked me out. And we were actually, this is around the time of the NBA Finals. And he was, you know, talking about, oh, man, you watching the game tonight? And we just had, you know, some friendly banter here and there. And, you know, just a really cool conversation, man. But, you know, for me, seeing that Delton Williams is out there this summer working, you know, and making money, you know, he seems like a great kid at the end of the day. And understanding that component of this story, that he has had a tragedy within his family, you know, losing, a brother and a friend to an unsolved murder. I understand why Delton carried the firearm, but it's all in how you use it at the end of the day. And hey, I think he's learned from it as well. And he's actually going to return as a non-scholarship player to this program as well. So, you know, that meaning, I mean, hey, he realizes that he's going to have to earn that spot back and earn good graces back with Coach D, to be honest, because a mistake is a mistake nonetheless. I really hope Delton Williams has learned from it, though. And I do sympathize with the guy, though.
Well, I just switch your words around a little bit because I don't think it's about knowing how to use it. I think it's about because I understand where he's coming from. If your brother was murdered by a firearm, yeah, you're going to be a little bit more cautious with your life. And not only that, you're going to be ticked off a little bit. You're going to want to have something to protect you. That makes sense. However, at the end of the day, you can't seriously consider using it, especially if it's a traffic incident. I mean, nobody's threatening you. No,
only way you could use that firearm is if someone is threatening your life and has a firearm pointed at you.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, I mean, so this is a road rage incident. But again, when you go through something like that, I can only imagine the mental state that takes a toll on the individual. So I understand. Yeah, I mean, anything, any little thing could trip a wire in Delton Williams' brain, knowing that emotionally the kid may have been unstable at the time. I mean, you know, he's making a turn, you know, a car is in his way. Something little like that can trigger something in you where you just have a short temper. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's of course. Yeah. Of course you're going to be more volatile, a little more mercurial after an incident like that, and you can't blame him for that. What I think is the most important thing to take away from this, first off, is what you brought up just at the end. He's returning as a non-paid player.
Right.
That's a big deal. And let me tell you, from a kid from New Orleans, you know, thank God for my scholarship because out-of-state tuition ain't cheap. It is expensive.
Yeah, it is.
So it shows a lot of dedication to this program. It shows that he really not only acknowledges his mistake, but wants to learn from it, wants to better his team, himself, the program at Michigan State, that he still wants to return because he's going to be paying for it in terms of tuition. However, his return, it's also a big gain for the Spartans on the football field. Let's not forget that aspect because Delton Williams was the number 3 running back last year. He finished with 316 yards, 5 rushing touchdowns, and he's an excellent player. You talked about the other running backs he'll be competing with, and he's really right in that mix, along with LJ Scott, along with, you know, Madre London, and along with Gerald Holmes. He will be a big feature for the Spartans next season and one of their main go-to backs on the goal line to power it in.
Yeah, because we know last year, of course, Jeremy Langford, who was a senior last year. I mean, he's done with the program now. Nick Hill also saw some time at running back last year for the squad. He's done. He was a senior last year. So, you know, Delton Williams is looked at, you know, as the guy to come in and step into that role as being that guy at running back. He's going to have some stiff competition because I also really like Gerald Holmes. I like Madre London. You know, I really think, you know, this is going to be one of the most intriguing position battles for this Spartan squad moving forward. But at the end of the day, I'm glad that Delton Williams is going to be returning to the squad now. Hopefully he has learned a lot from the situation because anytime you talk about cuffs being put on your wrist, I mean, that can wake an individual up. That can wake you up and really put life in perspective. And, you know, looking at, you know, what he had to say, you know, in his statement, actually, Williams had this to say, and this kind of puts into context where his mindset is and his thought process is when realizing that all of his dreams could have just been, you know, poof out the window due to one idiotic mistake. He went on to say, quote, "My return isn't just about playing football because I know it isn't forever. God willing, I might get the opportunity to play in the NFL, but I already have 64 credits and I'm in no place to, and I'm on pace to graduate. As some say, NFL means not for long. My degree is my primary plan, not my backup plan." So, and you know, it's a really, you know, interesting. He goes on to say, you know, this situation has certainly brought me closer to God. And he goes on to talk about, you know, this situation And, you know, he says all the right things, of course, in his statement. I'm pretty sure it was checked by many PR representatives to make sure that, you know, he came off as a guy who has learned from his mistakes. Let's hope that holds true as this season moves forward. Folks, you can call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 to discuss anything that we have discussed so far on the show or anything that happens to be on your sports noggin. Let's hit our first break, because after that break, we will be inviting our guest for today's Current Sports. His name is Cam Holding, and he is the head coach of the Michigan State men's lacrosse program. You don't want to miss that chat and so much more. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back. Well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. We're going to talk a little lacrosse. I'm pretty excited about this interview. His name is Cam Holding, a very unique guy, 26 years old, plays professionally in Major League Lacrosse and the National Lacrosse League for the Denver Outlaws in Colorado Mammoth, won a gold medal last summer in the World Games, runs a lacrosse camp in Lansing called Power Play Lacrosse, and is a local guy, originally from Canada, but graduated from DeWitt High School in 2007. It is my pleasure to welcome Cam Holding to WKAR's Current Sports. Cam, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Al. Thank you very much. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, my man. Thanks a lot for joining me today. Now, first off, I got to ask, you know, because I think you have a pretty interesting path to here in the United States, right here in Michigan. First off, Cam, though, when did you start playing lacrosse?
I started playing when I was 3 years old. Just most kids from Toronto and in British Columbia on the West Coast, that's kind of when they start playing lacrosse, 3 years old.
Wow. Now, you're originally from Whitby, Ontario, Canada, which is not too far from Toronto, if I understand correctly. How did you end up here in the States, my man?
Yeah, it's about half an hour east of Toronto, and there's a General Motors plant there, which is where my dad worked. So in 2005, he actually got a promotion over here, so we relocated to Lansing, Michigan, and he's still working at General Motors here at Delta Township.
Now, what is the lacrosse culture like when you compare lacrosse in Canada to that here in the United States, Cam?
I guess lacrosse in Michigan and the U.S., it's still growing. It's still kind of catching wind. But in Canada, not a lot of people know it's the national sport. And like I said, when kids are born, it's their parents are putting them into lacrosse. You know, here, I guess in Michigan, you see a lot more football, baseball kind of thing. But lacrosse is definitely starting to pick up, and it's actually the fastest growing sport in the U.S. right now. So I think in a couple of years, it'll definitely catch up.
That's very cool stuff. Now you're born and raised in Whitby, Ontario. And then in 2005, you were in high school when this move took place. I mean, was that move difficult for you and the family? I mean, moving to another country, even though it's Canada, but still.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, moving what a sophomore in high school. My sister was going into her freshman year, so just to pick up and move and not know anybody and be that foreign kid at a new school was kind of difficult. But then, you know, started playing hockey, and then, you know, kids in the school just started calling us Canada, like me and my sister and I just refer to us as Canada. And, you know, it's pretty easy to pick up friends as long as you're outgoing. And I guess that kind of made the transition a little easier, having that athletics to kind of create a friend group or a friend base.
Now, Cam, you went to DeWitt High School, and actually you helped start the DeWitt lacrosse program. How did that come about?
Yeah, when we were first moving here, obviously lacrosse is what I love to do. So when we were moving here, my dad was looking for a school that offered lacrosse. We found a nice place, nice house in DeWitt. Noticed they didn't have a lacrosse team, so my father, myself, and then another family, the Klisch family, also based out of Lansing, kind of got together and decided to start their own program. And now I think DeWitt has has over like 350 kids between boys and girls, and that program's just exploded. So it's kind of cool to see the growth in that area since we moved here in 2005.
Now, what was the entire scene like? I mean, when you talk about, you know, across the board here in mid-Michigan, I mean, you helped start the DeWitt lacrosse program, but what other lacrosse programs were out there for you guys to compete against when you talk about high schools here?
Yeah, the high schools, I think, Holt, Okemos, I know Waverly back in the early 2000s were a powerhouse in the area. So, I mean, schools still had it. It just wasn't that popular. In the last 10 years, lacrosse is just becoming more of a mainstream sport. And when kids are in third and fourth grade, instead of, you know, going to baseball in the spring, you know, you see a lot more kids picking up a lacrosse stick and really having a good time learning and playing that sport. So I think that's where there's been so much growth.
So, Cam, when you started that program at DeWitt, I mean, did a lot of kids come out and say, hey, I want to give a try at this thing? And if so, why do you think that was?
Yeah, a ton of kids did. Actually, the first trial we had just, I don't know, 50, 60 kids, and half the kids had never played before, so they just put a stick in their hand and say, here you go. But, I mean, lacrosse, it's a fast-paced sport. It's very, like I said, very fast. It's very physical. And I know my father, coming from Canada, it's a lot more physical you find up there, but he just went to basically football players and said, hey, you can, you know, play with a 6-foot pole on defense and slash kids, basically, and you can cross-check, you can hit. So I think that's how he kind of sold it to those kids. And then once you get out there and, you know, you try the passing, catching, it's tough, but it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to learn. And, you know, once you can pass and catch, just playing the game is awesome.
That is very cool stuff. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Cam Holding, who is the head coach of the Michigan State men's lacrosse program. Now, Cam, you played in the, play in the National Lacrosse League and Major League Lacrosse. What is that like? And how did you, you know, end up, you know, venturing into both of those endeavors?
Yeah, I was kind of fortunate. So the National Lacrosse League is an indoor lacrosse league, and we play at most of the NHL arenas. So we play out of the Pepsi Center in Denver, Colorado. And, you know, there's a league, it's called Box Lacrosse, up in Ontario during the summer, and you kind of get recruited to the NLL from that league. And although I lived in Michigan, I would drive back and forth for games in the summertime. So that's how I kind of got seen. And then I got signed by Colorado for the National Lacrosse League, which is indoor, played a season there. And then the Denver Outlaws of the outdoor lacrosse league, you know, they, I guess, took a liking to me and they signed me to that team. So I was kind of fortunate to be able to get into both leagues and be successful in both leagues as well. So it's kind of fun.
Cam, what's the life of a professional lacrosse player like? And what's the entire scene like? I mean, because, you know, when you talk about turning pro in anything and being a part of a squad and being signed and getting a check to do what you love, you know, a lot of people, you know, here in America, some of the immediate big sports that come to mind are, you know, the NBA, the Major League Baseball, the NHL. But lacrosse is not talked about a lot. I mean, what's the living arrangement like for you?
Yeah, it's actually pretty crazy. So they call it, you know, some people refer to it as like a weekend warrior league. Although guys get paid and it is a professional sport, you don't get paid enough to make a great living for yourself. So you'll find a lot of players in the league or firefighters, teachers, sole proprietors that do their own thing, whether it's a lacrosse company or something else. But basically you work a normal job Monday through Friday. Friday afternoon, you'll fly out to whatever city you're playing in. So it could be Denver, it could be New York, wherever we're playing. We'll practice Friday night. Quick practice on Saturday morning, just a light shoot around, and then you'll play a game Saturday night, probably go out with the team after if you win, and then flight home Sunday morning and back to the work week.
Wow. That's incredible schedule. How do you balance that, Cam?
It's difficult. And, you know, I mean, I'm lucky because I have my power play lacrosse here in town, so I can kind of create my own schedule and fly out as needed. But for guys that have full-time jobs, like some of the teachers, they sometimes don't make practice on Friday. It's a little bit more difficult for them. And, you know, I guess that kind of makes it difficult for the team to get in sync, you know, the night before a game. But it's what we got to do. And for the growth of the league and kind of, you know, I guess we just got to put that time in and hopefully one day we can build it up so that, you know, the kids that are third and fourth grade now don't have to worry about it and they can play full-time.
Yeah, certainly. Again, folks, we are chatting with Cam Holding, who is the head coach of the Michigan State men's lacrosse program. Now, Cam, for you, I mean, when you talk about, you know, professional lacrosse, and just the competition within the sport itself. I mean, what's like the ultimate dream for a lacrosse player? I mean, what's making it in the sport of lacrosse?
Just to get to the National Lacrosse League, Major League Lacrosse, those two things are very difficult because there's only 9 teams, and there's a ton of lacrosse players between Canada and the U.S. So to get there, number one, is very difficult. And to stay there, get through the process of training camp, and then find a spot on a team, find a role on a team, is tough to do. Once you do that, then winning the championship would be the next step. And like I said, there's 9 teams, in the league, and to beat up on those 9 teams, it's tough. It's tough to go the full distance. So, winning that championship at the end is definitely worthwhile.
What about internationally? I mean, what's the international competition like in other leagues across the board internationally for the sport?
Internationally, so for instance, last year I played on Team Canada, and that starts with a pool of 200 kids and 200 kids that are solid lacrosse players. Mm-hmm. And then they, kind of bring that down to, what was our roster size, 23 rosters of a roster size. And last year was actually in Denver, Colorado. 4 years from now, it's going to be in Manchester, England. But the competition's so tough. So for that, it was field lacrosse, and Team USA was favorited to win. Team Iroquois is very talented. The Australians are incredible. It's like I said, it's definitely growing. Last year at the Worlds, there was actually a team from Uganda, and they were incredible to watch. It was pretty cool.
That is very cool stuff. Cam, now you are the owner of Power Play Lacrosse, in which you all develop youth lacrosse players. What sort of training do you put these kids through, and what's the response you've gotten when starting Power Play Lacrosse?
Yeah, we started in 2010. My dad kind of pushed me to do a lacrosse camp. So we had, I think, 50 kids at a lacrosse camp, and now we've developed we have summer travel teams, and we have 9 summer travel teams. We have guys and girls, or boys and girls, winter leagues out of the Summit during the winter. Mm-hmm. We do individual training, camps, and now it's kind of moving into trying to help these kids get an education and play lacrosse as they move forward into college, which is really cool. So to be able to push these kids to get an education is kind of rewarding as well.
So how many kids do you guys have in the program right now?
Well, our travel teams, what do we have? Just shy of 200 kids. But then the winter leagues, we have 150 that go through. And, the kids really enjoy it, and they keep coming back and keep coming back because we teach different methods. So I take kind of a hybrid of what we learn in Canada versus what you're going to learn in the U.S., and the kids really enjoy that. In Canada, the emphasis is all stick skills. And in the U.S., it's more individual abilities. And mm-hmm. So it's a little different, and the kids seem to enjoy it, which is kind of neat.
Cam, why does that difference exist when, when looking at the Canadian game compared to the U.S. game? Why is that difference there?
Yeah, it's different because up in Canada, like I said, you play that box lacrosse, which in the U.S., that hasn't really hit mainstream yet. It's just field lacrosse. So you're playing inside a hockey arena on concrete or turf, depending on what the arena has. But you're in smaller spaces. You've got to react quicker, and the sticks go, the goalies are, they take up the entire net. The nets are much smaller. So the stick skills have to be just top notch in order to score goals and pass into tight spaces. So when you translate that to a field lacrosse game with a bigger playing surface and a bigger net, it kind of just makes things a little bit easier. And the experience in box lacrosse makes players more talented.
That's very interesting stuff. All right, Cam, before we get you out of here, my man, you being now the head coach of the Michigan State men's lacrosse program. I mean, how did that come about, my man?
They just kind of, I guess, what was it, about a month and a half ago, mm-hmm. I guess the previous head coach was released. I knew a couple kids on the team, and they kind of expressed interest to me, wondering if I was interested. Obviously, with my schedule, I wasn't quite sure if I could make it happen. We talked with the board of directors, the e-board of the team. They did a whole hiring process, and ultimately they picked myself. And then we also have another great guy on staff. His name's Dan Katzier, very talented. And then another assistant coach named Nate Smalls. But we just went through the hiring process. We selected everything. And now we're just getting ready for the season. We're excited. Got a golf tournament coming up to raise some money. Mm-hmm. As it is a club, the school doesn't really help us financially. So we kind of have to do that stuff by ourselves. So it's going to be a fun task. And I'm excited to get started.
Now, Cam, can you kind of take me through your yearly schedule then? I mean, if you are the head coach of this program, you know, what's your travel schedule like once you start back up, you know, playing in the you know, the lacrosse league, the National Lacrosse League and Major League Lacrosse? How is that balance going to work out for you?
Yeah, so the schedule for those leagues will come out in about September, and then we have bye weekends. So for all of our local games like Central Michigan, Oakland, Davenport, those kind of games we can schedule during the week. We have a spring break trip, which we'll do, and that won't affect anything with me. And then our road trips, I think we'll go out to Pittsburgh. We might go out west and possibly out down to like Georgia Tech and hit some of those schools. But we can do those all on bye weekends that I have in the NLL. So it should work out well. Like I said, if there's any conflicts along the way with practice or whatever, we have a great coaching staff in place. So the kids all understand that could be an issue, but like I said, we're very trustworthy in the coaching staff that we have. So,
Cam, with this being a club sport here at Michigan State, I mean, what sort of hurdles does that ensue? You kind of briefly touched on that actually just a minute ago.
Yeah, just the financial part. For instance, the players have to pay in order to play. They've got to pay for their gear, whereas an NCAA sport, everything's given to them because they're funded by the school. And then the other struggle is just, you know, turf time, field time, getting space in the team gym. Because we're club, we're not given the prime times. We're practicing from, you know, 9 to 11 at night on school nights. So, you know, the players really sacrifice a lot to make it work, but you'll find with a lot of lacrosse players, they continue playing and they sacrifice stuff because they love the game so much, which is what really sets lacrosse players apart.
It's all about the love of the game, my man. And you, Cam, you're only 26 years old. Now you're a head coach of a program. Is that kind of mind-boggling for you?
It is crazy, man. When they first hired me, I sat back and I was like, dang, you know, 26 and, you know, kind of running this whole program. But with the experience that I have and the rest of the coaching staff, I think that we're going to do a great job and take the program to new heights.
You're not pulling your hair out yet, are you?
No. Thankfully, there's not much to pull out.
There you have that. Well, hey, Cam, we're going to actually have you on the TV show in the coming week sometime soon, and we'll make sure we make that announcement here on Current Sports Radio in the coming days and weeks. So I'm looking forward to meeting you in person and having you in our TV studios. Again, folks, Cam Holding, Michigan State Men's Lacrosse Program Head Coach. Cam, thanks so much for your time, my man.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Cam Holding, got to love that. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will come back to that debate that we mentioned at the top of the hour, whether or not Alex Rodriguez should be considered for the MLB's Most Improved or Comeback Player of the Year award. You don't want to miss that chat. We'll be back in a flash. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Thanks a lot to Cam Holding, head coach of the Michigan State Men's Lacrosse Program, for joining me. If you missed that interview, again, we post each and every episode of WKAR's Current Sports on WKAR.org. So if you happen to tune in late and you want to listen to that chat, just simply go there where you can listen to that episode or today's episode or any episode we've done in the history of the show. Also, I have to bring up this. How about the Arizona Cardinals hiring Jen Welter as an assistant coaching intern for training camp and the preseason to work with inside linebackers of the squad? She is believed to be the very first female coach of any kind in the NFL. And this is sort of fitting because last week we engaged in heavy debate about whether the NBA, with, of course, Becky Hammon leading the San Antonio Spurs to the Summer League championship title in Las Vegas, with her doing that, I mean, whether or not we could possibly see the very first female head coach in the NBA. And look at the NFL already setting the trend right there, you know, hiring Jen Welter. She's not a head coach, but still the very first female coach of any kind in the NFL. That's pretty cool stuff, Isaac.
Yeah, it really is. And all these sports are moving in the right direction. Also, I'm not sure if you've seen her, but oh my gosh, this lady is jacked. Like, she definitely belongs in the NFL coaching staff because she, man, if I could have arms like that, I would do a lot of work for it. But
you got to hit Planet Fitness, my brother. Hey, join me to Planet Fitness. But yeah, I've seen pictures of her. She looks fierce, man. I mean, and you got to, and it's the NFL. It's a testosterone-driven league. So, for a female to come in, I mean, hey, you got to put your foot down and make sure that you're asserting yourself on a daily basis when working with NFL players. And hey, she's got the look, I tell you that. But congrats to Jen Welter. That's fantastic news. And the NFL sort of setting its own trend when it comes to female coaches in their league. Great stuff. I'm looking forward to seeing how she does. I'm definitely rooting for her. Definitely rooting for her. All right. Well, our question of the day, current sports question of the day, centers on Alex Rodriguez. Of course, yesterday, A-Rod had a pretty cool birthday present to himself. He turned 40 on Monday. And he homered in the sixth inning of the New York Yankees 6-2 win over the Texas Rangers. With that, he became just the fourth player in the long history of Major League Baseball to homer before he was 20 and after he turned 40. He's having one impressive year, folks. One impressive year. It's hard to really ignore the numbers of Alex Rodriguez right now. He's got a lot of home runs, 54 RBIs. He didn't play last year because of the performance-enhancing drug suspension that took place away from the game of baseball. But with the year that Alex Rodriguez is having, there are many out there that believe that he should be considered for Major League Baseball's Comeback Player of the Year Award. And there are others that say, hey, the reason why he is coming back is because of something illegally that he did that does not, adhere to the rules in baseball. While others who have done it the right way but missed last season due to injuries should have the leg up when being considered for this award. So Isaac, I asked you, my man, do you think A-Rod should be considered for this award?
Al, if it was just because of the suspension, I would say no. But I want to go Chris Berman on you and take you back to the seasons before,
yeah,
where A-Rod was not playing well whatsoever. His last season before suspension, not only was he hurt, but he batted .244, which was his worst since his second year in the MLB. The year before that, he also batted a lower batting percentage from this year. And also, in that whole season, he played 122 games and didn't even bat in as many runs as he's batted in already this season. So yes, A-Rod deserves the Comeback Player of the Year award. He's batting .276 with 24 homers, 59 RBIs. And not only that, this is not a Most Improved Player award. Let's not get those confused, because Most Improved Players frequently go to rookies who step it up their sophomore year, things like that. The history books state, kind of for baseball, this isn't an award that's been around that long, but Mariano Rivera, Chris Young, players with bounce-back seasons after injuries. A-Rod not only faced injury before his suspension, but he wasn't that good before his suspension, and he's back. So, Yes, A-Rod deserves this award.
I wouldn't give it to him just yet. I don't think he deserves the award because we still got a lot of baseball left to play.
Well, that's true.
So I want to temper the conversation by saying that there's still a lot of baseball left to play, and there's other names I think need to be brought up in this conversation as well. But I'm a black and white guy, Isaac, at the end of the day. Of course, baseball purists out there will say A-Rod broke the rules. He broke the rules. He used PEDs. He juiced up. And if you do something like that, You're first off, your legacy is tarnished, point blank, period. But at the same time, when you look at the criteria for the, Comeback Player of the Year award, it doesn't mention anything about using performance-enhancing drugs. It goes to, quote, the player who is judged to have reemerged on the baseball field during a given season. There is nothing when looking at the criteria for this award that says if you use PEDs in the past or the year before, that you cannot be considered for this award in the future. So I'm a black and white type of a guy. If this does not go against the rules, then yes, he should be considered because he is having one outstanding year so far. And in doing it at now 40 years old, Impressive stuff. Other names that should be mentioned, though. Ryan Madsen, right-handed pitcher for the Royals. He didn't play last year because of Tommy John surgery. Right now, his season stats, I mean, he has a 1.82 ERA, a .88 whip. I mean, he's unbelievable right now. Another guy. How about Detroit Tigers' own, Jose Iglesias? He didn't play last year, if you remember, due to stress fractures in both shins. Many people consider Jose Iglesias right now to be the best shortstop in the game. I know I do. I love watching him play. Everybody knows I have a man crush on Jose Iglesias. He's having a great year, not only doing his thing out there at shortstop, but, man, he's batting over .300 right now. So I think he needs to be considered legitimately in the American League. How about a former Tiger in Prince Fielder? His season stats right now, he's batting over .300, actually .341 on the season with the Texas Rangers. 2014 stats, three home runs, 16 RBIs, didn't have a great year, but he is having a pretty solid year for the Rangers right now. Jason Kipnis of the Indians, second baseman, he's batting over .329. He didn't have great stats last year either. So I do think when you look at this award, again, first off, you got a lot of baseball left to play, but Alex Rodriguez is turning a lot of heads. And, you know, seeing as though he's 40 years old right now, and another stat I want to bring up about A-Rod, I mean, you know, he's got I saw a stat that says he's got, 18 hits so far this year, and I think 9 of those hits have been home runs. I mean, that's absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff right now, Isaac.
Oh, it is. And A-Rod, the other thing about him is, you know, it's not one of these cases where he allegedly did something, all the evidence point to he did, but he was never reprimanded for it. He was suspended an entire year from baseball. He did not play the entire 2014 season. He served his punishment, let the guy go on and win awards like any other baseball player, because the thing is, he was caught. He served his time, and now he deserves to play just like anybody else. And like I said, my logic for him winning the most improved player, it's not only the suspension, but the injuries and the poor batting that had many Yankees fans hating him before that suspension.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Again, if you know, looking at the criteria for this award, it doesn't say anything about using PEDs. Again, even though baseball purists will argue that he should not be considered, I think legitimately you have to take a look at Alex Rodriguez for this award. And I'm very curious to hear what folks out there think. Again, you know, and there's always that part of me, though, when looking at what he's done this year. He hasn't been caught to have used PEDs, again or yet this season, or I should say again, because who knows, he may never be caught using it again. I think he learned his lesson, to be honest with you. But there's always that part of you looking at his numbers this year that says, man, you know, hey, is he juicing right now? You know, the average fan is going to think that from now on, seeing as though he got caught doing it in the past. What do you think, though? Should A-Rod be considered for the MLB's Comeback Player of the Year Award? Comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR, and I will read your comments live on the air during tomorrow's show. I want to give a special thanks to, of course, Isaac Constance, our engineer on WKAR's Current Sports. Great job today, Isaac. Also, Cam Holding, the head coach of the Michigan State men's lacrosse program. Thanks a lot to Cam for joining me today, and thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have one fantastic afternoon, and be easy, people.